Hello, honeys. Welcome back to another episode of Spilling the Tea. I'm Aisling. I'm your host. If this is your first episode, you are very, very welcome. We have a bit of a different episode today. We're not doing the period chats. We're not talking about hormones. I have the most amazing guest on, Katrina, who is a nutritional therapist. But more importantly for this episode and why I have her on is she is a mum. And that word, Katrina, does not come lightly. She has had such an amazing and very, very emotional draining journey to get to this point, and I'm so grateful she came in and shared her story. It was so emotional, guys. Have your tissues beside you. Me and Katrina were bawling halfway through this, and I just know by her sharing her story, she is going to help so many. There's links to Katrina's Instagram below, and she said you are more than welcome to get in touch if you have any questions. So hope you enjoy this episode, and I will chat to you all next week. I'm so excited to announce Ethos as our sponsor for season 2. If you follow me on Instagram, you've probably heard of them already. Ethos are an Irish CBD and hemp brand set up by couple Amy and Fergus, who are both extremely lovely people, may I add. They have a range of CBD oils and hemp teas, and they have blended organically grown hemp from Wicklow with adaptogenic herbs, which I'm obsessed with, and botanical extract to support a range of well-being needs. Their rest range supports better quality sleep, and their balance range helps to reduce daily stress and anxiety, and their active oil and repair balm are focused on reducing inflammation and aiding recovery from workouts. I recommend adding their supplements to your routine if you're looking to improve your sleep quality, stress levels, or reduce inflammation. Their teas are also a really, really nice addition to your bedtime or daily routine. You'll find Ethos in most pharmacies or health food stores, and they also kindly gifted me 20% off discount code for all of you lovely listeners. If you head to the link in my show notes below, you can subscribe there, and it'll be sent straight to your inbox in addition to a gorgeous bedtime yoga track to help you de-stress and unwind before bed. If you're curious about trying the products, check the digital consultation tool on their website to help you select the right product for your needs, or listen to episode 1 of season 2, where I speak to Amy about the science and benefits of CBD. So, Katrina, thank you so much for coming in today. She flew all the way from Kerry to come in and talk to us in person. And I think the first time I met you, your story literally like made me stop my tracks when we were talking about it. And I know you're going to help so many people. So thank you in advance for being willing to share your story with us.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited and I'm really looking forward to sharing the story as well.
I suppose before we get into what happened and your fertility journey, like, let us know who you are. Like, give us a bit of background. Obviously, you're a nutritional therapist, and she is an amazing nutritional therapist. I have had the honour of Katrina working alongside my clinic for the last, like, 3 months or so, and the feedback is brilliant. Like, you were literally, I've always, like, I need someone who is the same brain as me, and I feel like we're so on the same page. So I'm so confident in sending clients to you. I'm so delighted to have you on board. But fill everyone in. Like, who are you? Obviously, nutritional therapist. Give us a bit of background on who Katrina is.
Okay, so I'm Katrina. Hello. So I wasn't always a nutritional therapist. Certainly, I'd say so many of my friends listening to this are still shocked that I'm a nutritional therapist now. My diet in school, my diet through college was just shocking. But inevitably, I ended up having so many different health issues, digestive problems, skin problems, energy problems, fatigue, the work. So I'm very much the wounded healer. I went to a nutritional therapist myself, had amazing results, and decided I wanted to go off. I'm going to study this and I'm going to do this for other people. And so basically it's been a journey for me over the years, resolving my own symptoms. Went on to study nutrition. Then whilst studying nutrition, my own kind of fertility journey that we're going to go into in a little while, came to the fore, which got me really interested in women's health, hormones, fertility, pregnancy, and that's the area I work in now, predominantly preconception health, fertility, and helping people prepare for IVF cycles.
So who were you in your past life? What was your job before?
So prior to that, I worked for the Department of Education with autistic kids.
Oh my God. So I suppose still kind of helping. Like you obviously have that personality where you're drawn to make a difference and to help people.
Yeah, absolutely. And the work I did, it was one-to-one with families as well. So it was still that kind of helping role, caring role. Yeah, absolutely.
And then what age were you then when you went to that nutritionist?
I would have been, I would say about 25, 26, that kind of an age. And just did really, really well with that and fell in love with nutrition. I obviously learned firsthand the power of it. And actually my whole family went on a bit of a nutrition route then. Everyone was resolving symptoms everywhere and I just wanted to do that for other people too.
So you had already started in C&M. Katrina trained in the same college as me as well back in, I qualified in 2014, which is, I feel like that's another reason why we're so on the same page. Like a lot of people can be nutritional therapists, but I think we're so passionate about kind of the naturopathic perspective. We look at the root, we look at lots of different kind of healing tools together. We're big into Chinese medicine. We were just talking about that before. You know, Katrina as well is dying to start herbal medicine as well. So it just kind of gives, I think, an edge on maybe it just studying nutrition and not looking at it from more of a holistic perspective.
100%.
So were you actually studying nutrition then when you started to try to get pregnant? Fill me in on that process. So you had just got married, did you?
Yeah, so I got married in December 2015. And, you know, obviously in the honeymoon phase of being married, head over heels in love, like on cloud nine. And we decided that we'd try to get pregnant and it didn't happen for the first 2 months. And I was a bit like, okay, not too happy about this. Went Googling and I am like almost embarrassed to say, considering the area that I work in now. Mic drop. Found out about the fertile window.
Stop. Okay.
So I hadn't a clue that it had to be certain times of the month and all the rest of it. So once all that was figured out, fell pregnant straight away. And I mean, literally, I just thought all my dreams had come true and was just over the moon, overjoyed, just couldn't believe it. Literally thought life was made, we're sorted. Then a couple of weeks later, a little bit of spotting. Went to the GP and she just said, oh yeah, look, that can be normal, which it can, like that can be common in early pregnancy. Just said, if it got any bit heavier and you'd cramping, come back and we'll, you know, we'll look into it a little bit more. So I went away and for another week, everything was fine. And then heavy bleeding started, cramping started. So I went back into her and she said, yeah, look, most likely a miscarriage. We'll send you in for a scan. So I went in for the scan and they confirmed that I was after having a miscarriage. And I guess what came from after that for me was just, I was just literally, it was my earthquake moment, I guess. I couldn't believe it. I didn't know anyone else. Like I was pretty young in modern day terms, I guess. It was like 27 or 8 and none of my friends had kids. My sister hadn't had kids. I, you know, this whole miscarriage thing was completely new to me. Really blindsided me. And I suppose we left it a couple of months. Started to try again and fell pregnant again. And this time, and I think this is what happens at miscarriage as well. It definitely takes the innocence of pregnancy away.
Yeah, absolutely. You're not as excited the first as you were the first time. They'll never be the same as it was.
Absolutely. Yeah. So this time it was like, oh, yeah, look, we're pregnant again. You know, it was a little bit flat. Was trying to be cautiously optimistic. But went on the same time again a couple of weeks later.
And what was the week? How far were the pregnancies getting?
In 6 or 7 weeks.
Okay.
So that was pretty early. I could nearly just predict it. I just felt the exact same. It was a little bit of spotting. Then a week later, you know, the miscarriage itself would kind of kick off. So went into the GP, same thing, just confirmed that it had happened. And, you know, there's nothing offered at that point. You know, you're just told, oh, well, you'll just have to try again. And then if it happens again, we can help you then.
It's that phrase you said to me now has just shook me. So myself personally, I was in with the doctor in August. So I didn't ovulate in August. Like here's me again, like us putting our hands up. So I'm sitting here telling you guys what to do. But like, you know, it's hard to do it yourself. So I was up the walls. I had high prolactin, which stops ovulation. I knew exactly why. My thyroid is really high. My TSH was 3.8. So if other people, and I've by time Katrina's episodes, actually, sorry, no, I was going to say by time your episode's released, fertility episodes will be out. They're actually going to be next after this one. But one of the big things we look at for fertility is thyroid. And having your thyroid stimulating hormone less than 2.5 is kind of just one of the basic things that, like, us nutritionists will make sure that you're doing before you even try to get pregnant. So I went into the doctor kind of almost on like a recon mission. I kind of just wanted to see what the advice would be, because I knew myself, like, there was so many different things. I knew exactly why I was high. I knew exactly what I needed to do. I had a chat with my GP. I was like, okay, so obviously I'm concerned about my thyroid from a fertility perspective. And she's like, oh yeah, how long have you been trying to get pregnant? And I was like, oh no, I'm not trying at the moment, but maybe like next year, you know, whenever. And she's like, oh, so initially she was really forthcoming, being like, oh yeah, so you're trying to get pregnant, it's an issue. And then when I said, oh no, we're not trying, I just want to be proactive about it, her response was, sure, we don't even look at that until you've had 3 miscarriages. Yeah. And my jaw was on the floor. I just was like, think about how much trauma, how much upset you went through, so isolating. Like, why even allow that to happen when it's such an easy fix? Like, it's something we can look at ahead of time. Like, go get your bloods done before you even start trying. Is your thyroid above 2.5? Let's do something to fix that. Instead of the whole, like, waiting until, what, like, you know, that could be, what, a year and a half later for someone? Like,
oh, absolutely, yeah. Or just like a progesterone test. You know, just look at the real, like, you know, the likely issues that they could just run a blood test for. TSH, as you said, progesterone, as you said, you know, and just your general nutrients, just do a full blood count, but nothing. Yeah. It was just, oh, look, if that happens again, we'll look into it.
So what was the time frame between your two pregnancies at that point?
Like maybe 6 months, I'd say.
So you waited 6 months to try again, did you?
We left a gap, definitely. And that was purely because of stress.
Yeah.
You know, it really did take it out of me. And like my GP was like, look, you're young, you know, take a break, sort of a thing. And I got really, I'd say my first experience of anxiety was around this time as well. Like, naturally,
of course,
it was, you know, it was kind of like, oh, you know, not everything in life is a given.
Yeah.
It was the first thing, I suppose, that it went wrong, and it just really shook me.
Like coming out of like your love bubble and the marriage and the wedding and they were pregnant and it just literally like kicks you in the tummy. And did you find there's any other support? Like, did they say, you know, did the GP say, you know, this group, or did you get any other support from other people? Because I feel like that's something when people are going through things, it's so comforting knowing someone else is going through the same thing. So did you find that anywhere else that helped you?
Absolutely nothing.
No,
there was nothing. And do you know what else was actually really hard? And was at the hospital, not one person actually said, you know, I'm sorry for your loss, or, you know, there was just no acknowledgement whatsoever.
Like.
No, just, I think actually they said was, oh yeah, look, your uterus is empty. You'll be okay to try again after your next period. But, you know,
we were like, my baby is gone. To you, it's not. Like, to them, it's their job. And it's like, we see this every single day. And, you know, but to them, it was your baby. And you were talking about, okay, my due date is this month. And you know what I mean? You and your husband obviously had those conversations in those 6 weeks.
100%. Like, so it's just,
so that's actually a really interesting question. Like, what would be your advice to someone who's on the other side of it? Like, okay, family members had a miscarriage, like what to say and what not to say? Because I think that's something that sometimes people say nothing. Us Irish are so awkward that like saying nothing is almost saying something, do you know? Or like just give them a hug, or like what would you not say basically?
Okay, so I think we can actually just make it so simple and treat it the same as any other loss. You know, just tell the person, I'm so sorry to hear it. That's so hard. Just validate their feelings. It's so shite that that's after happening to you.
Yeah.
And that's it. Or ask them, is there anything you want? You know, would you want to sit in? We'll have wine and chocolate, watch a movie. Do you want to go out? Do you want to go shopping? You know, just ask them what they want, how you can support them.
Yeah.
The same way you do if something else had went wrong in their lives. And I guess the things not to say, and just to preface it by saying for the people that have said these things, they're saying them out of love. Like they're saying these things to make you feel better.
Yeah.
But it's no sentence that starts with the words at least.
Yeah.
At least you can get pregnant. Oh, at least you're only a couple of weeks gone. Asher, at least you're young. Like none of that is a comfort.
Yeah.
You know, and it kind of, it trivializes what you've gone through. Like when you disclose something like that, you want your feelings validated. So no at least sentence, just you're sorry, what can you do? And, you know, that's it really, just offer your support.
Yeah. And just so everyone knows, about what age are you now?
Okay, it's your question.
With COVID, I never know my age. I actually think I'm 30, but I'm not.
No,
I'm 32.
I feel the exact same.
I've been robbed of 2 years.
I am 34.
34. So like you, like this was a long time ago, this thing as well for people listening. I think our generation, we're such planners, right? And even to the point of just in coming home, I'll order my Just Eat, I'll jump in the shower, it'll be ready by the time I get out. Like, you know, we just rely on like just things going the way the schedule is just working, because that's the way technology has made our lives. Everything is just on the ball. But fertility is something that we cannot control. And it's so interesting that you like tried, you know, we started trying at 27, which was young, like considering like you just got married earlier than maybe, like I didn't get married till I was 30. So imagine I was like, okay, I'm married now. I'm going to give myself another 4 years. And then it took me, you know, 5 years to get pregnant. So something just to really keep in mind for everyone listening, like if having children and pregnancy is literally like your goal, it's something that's really, really important to you. Put that as a priority, you know, on top of a job or top of family. And obviously, like, you have to make sure that your lifestyle and it's the right timing of things. But just, I even had someone today and she was like, oh, I want to be pregnant by the time I'm 30. So I'm like, you know, and she's 29. No, she's 28. So in one sense, it's brilliant. She came to me, she's giving herself loads of time. But I was like, at the same time, she's like, we're going to start trying next January because it's my birthday in something like April. So I want to be pregnant by my birthday. And I was like, hold on a minute. I'm like, it does not work like that. I was like, why didn't you stop, like, not try, you know, or not try to not get pregnant. Maybe in like September and see what happens. If that, she's like, it's the most important thing to me. So it's just, I think that's a really important thing to highlight as well, because things always don't go as planned, especially something like this.
Oh my goodness. So, like, it's such a good point. Like, this is a spoiler alert, but I mean, my fertility journey was like 6 years, you know, and like, and would never in a million years have thought that.
And sorry, just before we move on to the rest of your amazing story, what were your periods like beforehand? Because I think for me, when I see people with miscarriage, like I do ask them, you know, it kind of tends to be the people who might have had really bad periods, who are like, oh yeah, my PMS is always really bad, or my cycles were always irregular. Sometimes you do see that trend, and I'm not saying that's always the case. Sometimes it is just completely random. But would you have suffered at all with hormonal issues when you were younger?
Not really. Now, looking back, I suppose I did have hormonal acne. You know, was that just normal teenage stuff? Mm-hmm. Was it an imbalance? I don't know. Looking back again, I do also remember every period I got these pains down my back, really severe pains that radiated down my legs. I did go to the doctor with them, but there was nothing done about it. Looking back now, I would have been, why didn't you go in? Why didn't you push? Because it did turn out that endometriosis was on the picture. Mm-hmm. And there was symptoms there. But again, I didn't have the awareness. I was told I was fine. You know, who was to know that this issue was coming, and did it even have anything to do with it? But
yeah. Sometimes like that, I don't mean to say to anyone listening like, oh, you've had painful periods, you're at risk of a miscarriage, but it's more just the trend, I think, that progesterone, so important for maintaining pregnancy. And if you have listened to my podcast, you have heard me mention progesterone. You've mentioned me saying, I want to spray it on like perfume if I can. Like, it is one of the best hormones for helping with any kind of PMS, whether it's sore boobs or cramps or headaches or acne, that is your progesterone. So it's just, when I see people chronically, like, you know, symptoms of PMS for years, it's like they've been low in progesterone, give or take, like, you know, it goes without saying for that long as well. So then you had the two miscarriages, you were told then, okay, it happens again, come back to me. So fill us in, what happened next then?
So we didn't really leave a break there then. We literally tried again, got pregnant, you know, straight away. And I suppose I was just expecting it again, and it was the exact same pattern. And at this stage, we went back in, had the scan, everything was confirmed. But this time they said, okay, it's number three now, we can refer you to further testing. So I can't remember how long that took, but we went in for the testing, and that was, I remember, I think there was 12 vials of blood taken for me that day. So that was like blood clotting markers, immune markers.
And was this in the hospital? Were you referred on to a specialist?
Yeah, so their pregnancy loss clinic at the maternity hospital. Hormone markers, they check for diabetes. We both got chromosomal karyotyping done. Like, you name it, in fairness, they actually was pretty comprehensive. In the area that I work in now, I kind of wonder why the hell wasn't sperm looked at?
No. Sperm wasn't looked at?
No, never. Sperm was never looked at the pregnancy loss clinic. Sperm wasn't looked at until we went privately ourselves.
Like, I'm actually speechless. I cannot. Like, I actually, like, even looking at Katrina, I actually can't get the words out. Like, for people listening, fair enough, the women have to maintain the pregnancy and, you know, we do have to be healthy and we have, you know, don't drink your caffeine and don't have your liver and your sushi. Like, there's rules when you're pregnant that you need to try and help to maintain pregnancy. But when you are trying at the start, especially those early weeks when the egg is dividing and, you know, trying to form into the fetus and the baby, it is literally 50-50. Like, I just can't believe a clinic like that wouldn't. And it's real blamey as well, I kind of feel. Like, it's your fault. Like, what, your husband's going to drive you and he'll pick you up in 2 hours? Like, you know what I mean? What's
but
he doing?
You're the one being investigated.
He's in McDonald's, like, do you know what I mean? So
he's
that's
done his
shocking.
Job.
Oh my God, I can't even, I just can't get over that.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I asked about that. But anyway, so the testing, the different tests were carried out and I think it was like maybe 3 months waiting for the results. So they came back and everything was absolutely perfect, which obviously sounds great, but sometimes you actually want something to be wrong so that you can fix it. So they gave us a prescription for high dose folic acid, I would say aspirin and a steroid. And they just said, look, we found nothing wrong. Take this combination the next time you're pregnant, just in case. Some of those works. So we said, fine. And I kind of thought, oh my God, maybe this is it. Mm-hmm. Great, let's go. And exact same thing happened again, pregnancy number 4. And at that stage, we decided we'd go to a private clinic, see if there was any further testing that they do. And, you know, they were great. They did a sperm test, DNA fragmentation test, further tests on me. I think it was a Chicago blood panel, which get sent to Chicago, and that's really intensive immune investigations. Again, absolutely nothing came back. Thyroid antibodies were checked. Everything was absolutely perfect. So all that they did was another version of that prescription. So I think blood thinning injections, a higher dose steroid.
And what was the steroid for? Just inflammation?
They were just like, I think the things that they look for are blood clotting issues and immune issues. And even though I came up with none of them.
They just thought, and did they not give you progesterone to take?
Not yet.
Okay.
No. And to be perfectly honest, I don't think it was even tested yet.
Okay.
And we're this far along.
Okay.
So,
And sorry, how far were you then? You were in studying nutritional therapy at this point.
Yeah.
So had you already kind of started your own journey into kind of the more natural medicine side of things? Like, did you ask lecturers, or was it still just kind of like you were just learning and you didn't realize the power that nutrition would have?
Still learning, but I was implementing stuff. Like, I'd been to a nutritionist myself over the years and now I was studying it myself. So I was definitely doing dietary things in the background, supplementing relatively well. And at the same time, you know, you're scared to question the doctor. You know, they're the experts. Mm. You know, I obviously did the injections, did the steroids, and like, these work for loads of people. It's just that I wasn't diagnosed with anything that these were going to help me with. But anyway, we did it on the next pregnancy. So that was, where are we now? Pregnancy 5, with this new protocol. And this time it was a little bit different. I didn't get the same bleeding that I usually would get. So I kind of thought, okay, maybe this was it. Maybe I needed, you know, these injections and steroids. And for the first time, I got to go for a scan that wasn't the emergency check. Well, not emergency, but not a one that I turned up to check that I miscarried. This was an actual early pregnancy scan. So I was like, okay, this is exciting. Let's go. And I wasn't bleeding or anything at this stage. But this time, the uterus was empty, but I was still pregnant. My pregnancy hormone was high. And so it was an ectopic pregnancy. So the pregnancy was in my tube this time. So I was admitted into hospital. I was there for almost a week, and eventually I miscarried naturally and didn't require any treatment.
Oh, Katrina, that is just like, you've awful. So, for people who don't know, like, ectopic pregnancy is that. So one thing actually I learned only probably a couple of years ago, and it shocked me. I was like, when you conceive, the sperm goes to the fallopian tube. Like, it doesn't, you don't actually get pregnant like in the uterus, and then the egg has to travel down into the uterus, and it takes what, like maybe between like 5 and 10 days ish.
Yeah.
But So it's like as if the egg never moved. The sperm got there and got into the egg and just nothing happened since. It just didn't move. Isn't that kind of...
Absolutely, yeah.
It can be really dangerous as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Extremely dangerous. So that's why it was admitted. They wanted to watch this, see what was going to happen. You know, there's a risk of internal bleeding and things like that. So luckily... I say luckily, and you know what? I actually just got a flashback to actually being pregnant then. It was so strange that the thing that I was most afraid of, which was a miscarriage, is what I was actually hoping for in that pregnancy. You know, that I wanted to miscarry naturally so that the ectopic pregnancy would be resolved.
Yeah.
And that is what happened. And, you know, that was quite traumatic, really. Because this time you don't just have the grief of miscarriage with ectopic, you have the trauma of, I suppose, a threat to your own health as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
And it was something different. Like, the other ones were like, okay, this has happened before, but this was a new thing that might be another obstacle for you. Yeah.
So it was definitely like, where do we go from here? Like, we've done all the hospital testing, they have nothing more to offer. We've been to the private fertility clinic and, you know, this is where we are now. And we had done their protocol as well. So I can't remember. Did we take a bit of a break at that point? I can't actually remember. I hope we did. I know that we did go to a doctor up here in Dublin in the Beacon. So we moved on and he did some further testing and one of the things he recommended was an investigative laparoscopy, which it hadn't been suggested before and made a lot of sense. So he wanted to check the tubes. He wanted to look for things like endometriosis and just basically check the internal environment. Mm-hmm. I suppose it was the last thing that hadn't been checked. So that made sense to us and got ready for surgery and headed off for that. And like that was stressful as well. I mean, nobody wants... You know, when you decide that you're going to have a baby, you don't expect that you're going to have these miscarriages. Then there's an ectopic pregnancy. And now all of a sudden, you know, you're going for surgery as well. Like just thinking back, I just want to go. I gave that Katrina such a big hug.
And it's all consuming. Like I presume then at this point, even if you were 30, 31, like I'm sure your friends may start trying like having babies and people around you in your circle and... It is consuming for people who are going through it. Like it's hard to be positive all the time and to, you know what I mean? Not like, did you feel like it was always in the back of your head over those couple of years? Or do you have times where if you said, no, let's not think about it, you had those 6 months of just, you know, forgetting about it? And
I think what really, really worked for me was to kind of get it out of my head. Like it would literally be like ping ponging around in your head, of course. But what really, really worked and what I would advise people to do is make a list. And the list would be your controllables, your uncontrollables. So what I used to do was, okay, look, I'm on top of my diet. I'm on top of my supplements. I'm going for acupuncture. You know, I'm on top of all of that. Don't need to think about it. And then I'm going to all of the best doctors. I've had all of the best tests. If, you know, we used to always plan ahead, like if it doesn't work out with this doctor, this is where we're going next.
Okay.
So then that wouldn't always be going around in my head. Yeah. I would just, if it started, I would just say, go back and look at the list. And then whatever had started, worry had come into my head, it would be like, no, you've that sorted. It's there in your list.
Yeah. So you took back control. You control what you can't control.
Yeah, absolutely. And I definitely think that that's where diet and lifestyle, while it obviously helps on a physical level, it definitely helps mentally as well.
Yeah.
Because... like that's what you can control, optimizing your egg and sperm health. You know, they're the things you can kind of hold on to as well. You're like, okay, well, look, I'm literally doing everything I can do. But I went for that surgery anyway, and they did discover some mild endometriosis. And I guess I was kind of glad. I was like, okay, you know.
Finally.
Maybe this was it. And like, it was largely asymptomatic and it was quite mild. So the surgeon did say it likely wasn't causative of what happened.
And where was the endo?
It was literally, I think it was nearly everywhere. Okay. I remember seeing it, like his report, and it seemed to be everywhere, but it seemed to be really mild at the same time. And it just wasn't symptomatic. And he said it was stage one and there's four stages. So he said it wasn't concerning at all. He didn't think that that was the issue. And he also did a test of my tubes because of the ectopic. So it's a spill dye test, where they put dye through the tubes, and it's to see that that comes back out, that there isn't a blockage. That was all clear. He did some further testing and our blood testing as well. That was all fine. And I suppose I kind of went home from that and I kind of thought, okay, maybe this was it. Like maybe the endometriosis was the problem all along, and kind of renewed hope. And we were like, okay, you know, that was probably it. That's probably what's been missed all along. Everything sorted. So
did he remove the tissue?
Yeah.
Okay. So you got like, yeah.
Yeah. No, literally everything was done. And he did another procedure as well called an endometrial scratch.
Yeah.
So that's, it's supposed to like increase fertility. It's literally what it says in the tin, just a little scratch of the endometrial lining. So it like encourages inflammation and blood flow to the area that's supposed to make you quite fertile.
Okay.
So with that diagnosis and the endometriosis taken away, we were thinking, okay, you know, this is it, everything's solved. And so once I recovered from the surgery, which, you know, was actually really quick, we tried again and we fell pregnant. And this time I had more symptoms. So I was getting nauseous. I had cravings. I was gone off coffee. I was peeing all the time. Like this was the first pregnancy that it actually
felt. You were like, I feel pregnant.
Yeah. It was like, okay, this is pretty intense. I remember it was actually my nutritional therapy clinics were on and I just felt so sick, but I was like...
You were delighted. Yeah. I feel so sick. Yeah, the morning sickness.
Amazing. Felt like an absolute goddess. And I remember actually it was inside in a clinic and I got up and there was a pain in my left side. And I said, oh my God, this is it again. I don't know what's really strange is until you've had an ectopic pregnancy, you never think about your fallopian tube. You don't know what your fallopian tube feels like, but as soon as you've had a pain in it, you'll never forget it.
Okay.
And I just felt that's definitely my fallopian tube. That's where the pregnancy is. And I rang the hospital and I told them my history. I told them that I had a pain there. And they said to come in straight away. And I can remember it was a Saturday night, so they don't do early pregnancy scanning. They'd be transvaginal at that stage and they just don't do those. They only do them during the week. So they said, we can't scan you, but we'll test your pregnancy hormone and we'll check you out. And I remember the pregnancy hormone was really high and they just said, look, you know, everything's looking great. Your cervix is closed. Your HCG is high. We probably think maybe you're just a little bit anxious. So I was sent to home with the diagnosis of anxiety. And even though I explained the pain and to this day, I regret walking out that door. I just didn't advocate for myself. Like I knew what was wrong.
I suppose part of you probably didn't want to believe it either. You probably wanted to be like, yeah, I'm anxious. You know, like
that's true.
I think probably the head and the heart there probably took over. The heart probably took over a little bit, you know, when your head was like, Katrina, like, you know, the pain.
Yeah. So that's so true.
Yeah.
So every time that I was like, yeah, that's the pain, I was like, no, but the doctor said that everything's fine.
Yeah, that's being human as well. You know, I think we've all done that, definitely.
Absolutely. So they told me to come back on Monday for a scan. And like, that pain only got worse over the weekend, which was probably good because I was prepared on Monday. I knew what they were going to say. So I went in anyway, went up for the scan. And it was this really lovely lady that I'd met before. And I just said that I have a pain and that's why I'm here. And she said, look, just hop up and we'll have a look. And at this stage, I'd had so many scans. I saw myself straight away that my uterus was empty. And I just said, the uterus is empty, isn't it? And she said, yeah. And I said, well, swing to the left because that's where it is. I can feel it.
Okay.
And do you know what? The bittersweet part of this scan was... It was the first time that I got to see a heartbeat.
Oh my God, you actually make me want to cry. Oh my God, I want to cry. Oh God.
You know, so like, I remember.
So the baby was there, like, you know, they were fine.
Absolutely.
Just in the wrong place.
Yeah.
Oh, my heart.
Yeah, so it was the first time and she was so nice. Like she said, look, I have to tell you that there's a heartbeat there. She said, I know you can see it anyway. And I just remember staring at it and it was so strange because it was so bittersweet. I was like, oh, amazing. Yeah. We can get to heartbeat stage. I can't believe it. That means we've got healthy embryos. You know, I was trying to see all the positives. And at the same time, then it just dawned on me. Yeah, but it's not viable. You know,
It's nothing we can do. Yeah.
It's there, but it's in the wrong place. And I suppose it dawned on me pretty quickly that my own health was fairly compromised as well. So what happened after that? Like, this day was just the craziest day. I had lunch plans. I actually had dinner plans as well. It was like such a, it was just one of those days. I had work the next day. Like, this was not what I was expecting. And I knew I'd be admitted. And I kind of thought, I suppose naively, it was going to be the same as the last time I'd be admitted and I'd be waiting to miscarry and, you know, everything would be grand. I'd recover and get through it. But that wasn't the case with this. You know, it was very quickly I noticed that there was more staff arriving and there's people in and out and there was phone calls being made. And I kind of said, okay, this seems a little bit different. And I kind of asked her, I said, you know, am I okay here? And she said, oh, I remember the phrase she said was, Katrina, to be honest, you're a sitting duck. She said, you need surgery. And I said, okay. Right. And then in my head, I started thinking, okay, I must go home, I'll pack a bag, you know, I'll get organized, and I suppose I'll probably have to come back in tomorrow. And so I said that to her then. I said, so like, can I come home now and just get packed up? And she said, no, like, Katrina, this is extremely serious. You're going for emergency surgery. Like, we're prepping you now. And like, oh, actually just thinking about it is just giving me a shiver. So that was that. Like, less than an hour later, I was gone through the theatre doors.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God.
And I mean, this, like, you know, usually, like, the last surgery I had was, you know, a pre-organized one or whatever, a scheduled one. And so it was, you know, it was like really lighthearted, walking down the corridor to the theatre, whereas this time they were running with the trolley. Like, it was very scary. And
you're still processing. Like, you're like, she's at the heartbeat. Oh, I have to go to surgery. Like, you know, that I'm sure from just emotional perspective, like you said, just the whirlwind of a day.
Oh, it was crazy. And it was just when you think about this surgery as well. So this was surgery to remove, you know, the heartbeat that I'd just seen, this little baby that I'd, you know, in a few short weeks, you know, a little bit of an, you know, an attachment to. But at the same time, the surgery was, I suppose, going to be saving my life. It was just such,
it's just unfair. That's the word. It's just so unfair.
Yeah. So I had the surgery and like literally recovered so well, left the following day, and it was so strange. Like, I came in, I think 10:30 on a Monday for the scan, and on Tuesday at 10:30, I walked back out the door, and like how much had changed in that 24 hours.
Yeah.
You know, the thing with ectopic pregnancy, that's never spoken about.
Never. No. And how common is ectopic pregnancies?
Do you know what? I actually can't remember. I do remember that they told me, like, you know, the chances of it reoccurring were so low. And I don't actually know how often it was.
Yeah, maybe look it up after and see.
Or how often it is. I don't actually know that. But yeah, so at that point.
That was pregnancy number six.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was tough. You know, it was really hard to kind of think, okay, yeah, we'll just try again. Mm-hmm. You know,
because that was the new something. It was the endo. Okay, it's endo, and this was it was the new road, wasn't it?
Absolutely, and like the tubes were clear. Like, I was really excited, and I suppose, you know, it was like the miscarriages, and then it was the ectopic. Now there was a ruptured ectopic. You know, there's been two surgeries at this point.
And just to ask, I think one thing that's forgotten about when women have miscarriages are the men, like. Your husband, the father, like there's someone else on the other side of that as well. And it's very much the women, I think, that kind of, even like you've been in the hospital, I'm like, oh, I'm, you know, if someone says to you, I'm sorry for your loss, it's normally to you. How did your husband cope with this? Like, I suppose he was probably really upset for you as well, but did he go through the same, you know, upset and grief? And like, you know, what was his approach, or how did you see him, or did it affect your relationship at all?
So I don't want to go into him too much just because he's been really supportive of me sharing the story,
okay,
but I don't want to kind of, you know, to go into him too much, but he was an amazing support. And what I would say is it's definitely something that could tear you apart, but I felt we definitely nearly got stronger with it. I think, I don't know. I suppose I know that we can rely on each other through anything. Yeah, I know it sounds bizarre, but I think it definitely brought us closer together.
And I think that is, it can go one of two ways. Like
100%. Yeah, no, we were just there for each other every step of the way, basically.
Amazing. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, yeah, anyone listening, don't forget about the guys as well.
I absolutely, yeah. 100%. And they do get forgotten about. It's in Ireland, like, it's still very much women's issues.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, but absolutely.
And girls chat, like, you know, I'm sure you've met friends for walks and you just talk about it. You have to just dissect every single inch. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I went to the hospital and they said this and that and that. And he probably met his friend and we're like, ah, you know. Yeah, unfortunately. Like, and lads, they've so few words, and that's their way of, you know, communicating. Yeah. Where, and sometimes it's not always a good thing. So I think, like, just watch them as well. Like, make sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because yeah. I think they feel that they have to be really strong for you.
Yeah.
But then who's being strong
exactly.
for them?
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. So where were we?
So what happened next? This is number 7 then.
Yeah, so that was number 6. Why did we decide to go for number 7? There was definitely a reason now that we got excited again. The reason that we decided that we would try again was I kind of thought, well, maybe it was that left tube was the issue all along. And now that's been removed. So
you lost a fallopian tube?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so By the time I actually got to theatre, I had actually been bleeding internally, but I don't know, was I presenting as bleeding internally? But I was. So when I got to theatre, I had the tube had partially ruptured already, so it was too damaged. Basically, they removed it, and I suppose I'd had 2 ectopics in there. You know, it was removed, and so then we kind of thought, okay, maybe that was the issue all along. And, you know, the right tube might be fine when I recover from surgery, we'll try again. And we really thought again, you know, everything was fine now, that might be the answer. And I fell pregnant again, like, really quickly. And this time I had a pain on the right side. Now, this time I probably would diagnose myself with anxiety. I did go in and they scanned me early, in fairness to them. They were really, really good. They were great. And I had a cyst over there, but there was nothing in the tube. There was also nothing in the uterus. So this time it was pregnancy of unknown location. And they were worried that it was an ectopic in the ovary, which can be quite serious. So I was admitted to hospital again. And, you know, I did go on to miscarry a couple of days later. And yeah, that was number 7. And like at this point, like, it was really disheartening. It was really running out of, you know, I suppose, treatment options. Was running out of things that it could have been. Definitely felt really deflated. And I think after that one, I remember being in hospital and Googling surrogacy and Googling clinics in the Ukraine, and I was really just for the first time in the mindset of, I don't actually think I'm going to be able to carry my own baby. And I, for the first time, just felt like I don't think I can go through another pregnancy.
Your,
like,
your emotional tank was just empty.
Literally sums it up. Like, I was just done. And I just couldn't believe that I was Googling these things. I just didn't in a million years think that this is where we were going to get to. So I don't even know what year we're in now. I just know that it was pregnancy number 7. And that, yeah, I was, for the first time, I think, actually just really deflated. Like, I'd been really, like, I don't want to be toxic, like, toxic positivity and all of that, but up to that point, I'd actually been pretty okay. Like, I suppose it was just busy. Like, there was always tests, you know, I was pregnant a lot. You know, and I was always looking up new supplements, new dietary things. Like, I really kind of just kept positive and kept going. And this was the first actual time that I was like, I actually just don't know.
There's nothing else. You're like, I don't know anything else.
I was just like,
Your list was all ticked.
Like, yeah, yeah, like 100%. So I guess this was actually 2019. I just thought of it there. And I was like, okay, we're just done for a couple of months and done with this. This was August 2019, actually. And I was just, for the first time, I'm done. I'm taking a break from the entire thing. And I did that, and I had a couple of months of actually just, we just completely just left it go as much as you can, but we actually did. And I think if you do have time on your side, it's probably, you know, a good thing to do. And then in January 2020, we decided we would go to an IVF clinic. Now, this was on our list, but I never actually thought that we'd make it down that far in the list. But we went, and I suppose we went there with the plan that we'd be making embryos for a surrogate. Like, when I went in for the initial appointment, one of my first questions was, any embryos that we make, you know, is it possible to have them transported to Ukraine or wherever there'd be a surrogacy clinic? So that was very much our intention. And so we decided that we'd go ahead with an IVF round. And that was to start in March 2020.
Which we all know what happened next.
Absolutely. So I think I had done the first injection, and we went into level 5 lockdown the following day. Now, I could have kept going, like, we were given that option. But it was anxiety on my part. I mean, we were seeing things out of Italy, like what the hospitals were like. And
absolutely.
I was just thinking, if I need any medical care during this. So we decided we'd leave it and wait for things to settle down. So then in...
the 2 week window, flatten the curve. You're like, I'll do it in 2 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. So we ended up doing it in July 2020, when everything kind of settled down. And do you want to kind of go into...
So we are going to record after this a whole episode on IVF. So definitely people can go and listen to the incident. Because I think the fact that you've been through it is amazing. And it can just give people just even just a bit of comfort and like what to expect. Or like someone like me who's never gone through it, you know, to able to have more empathy for people. And so definitely when you finish this episode, actually it's not going to be out for a couple of weeks, but keep an eye for a few weeks time for Katrina. So you did the round of IVF.
Okay, yeah. So we'll do a whistle toss stop tour of IVF. So yes, we did the round in July.
Yeah.
And
and just explain actually for people who don't know what IVF is. What is IVF?
So like literally it's pregnancy outside of the body. Mm-hmm. So they collect the eggs, they collect sperm, they're put together in a petri dish, and that's literally how little babies are made.
Yeah.
So we did that, and what did we have? Had we 5 blastocysts, I think. And we were told, just advice from the doctors, after having so many losses, they said it would be a good idea to get our embryos tested. And that's to test their chromosomes. And so what we did was, well, we didn't do anything. What the embryologist did was a biopsy of all of our little embryos, and they were sent off to a clinic in London. And it's hard to explain, like, unless you've been through IVF, but you actually do have, like, this emotional attachment to your little embryos. So I was traumatized, like, thinking, you know, of them having this biopsy done, and, you know, they're all going off to London and all of this. Like, it is actually quite emotional. Like, that's all a part of you as well. And it's going on, you know, and you've nothing, you know,
and
control
so
over
important
it.
To you. They're so special and so valuable to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So like all of that, like, was quite emotional as well. And I think it might have been maybe 8 weeks waiting to hear if any of our embryos are actually viable and if we were going to be able to...
8 weeks? Yeah. Wow, God. It's almost like another pregnancy. Like, do you know what I mean? That early weeks of pregnancy, like...
Yeah, so that was a really long time, like, waiting for that phone call to see the outcome of that and, you know, kind of wondering, okay, maybe is the our issue that, you know, we're just not compatible. We don't make embryos that can, you know, carry on. So, like, that was quite stressful waiting. And as well, we'd kind of been warned, like, just, and it's completely natural, that maybe one might come back okay, off 4 might be okay. But like, they kind of told us there will be, you know, a drop off. So we ended up that 3 of them were considered suitable to use, like that they were chromosomally perfect. And that was a really good result. So, you know, we were really happy. And I suppose while we were waiting for the test results, we got talking and we said we would give an IVF pregnancy a go. But if there was a miscarriage, that, you know, we wouldn't do another one. Like, your embryos are very, very precious. So that's the plan, that I was going to try once and then we'd move on to a surrogate. So we did our first transfer. I think that was November 2020. And it didn't work. And that was so crushing.
Okay.
You know, because...
It was just another thing. You're like, oh, hey, this might work.
Yeah. And they're just so precious. Like, we only had three of them. And that was one. And then it also wasn't, you know, I didn't actually get pregnant. So it kind of meant now we were going to try another one with me, which we did. So in January 2021, we did my second transfer. And in October 2021, my little boy was born.
Oh, brilliant. Everyone's probably bawling out listening to this. Me and you are sitting here crying anyway. Oh, like, I can't even imagine you holding your baby, like, when he was born. Like, can he, like, just amazing. To say it was both with bawling here in the studio. But...
Yeah.
How did you feel for that pregnancy? Like, at what point did you let yourself be excited and have the conversation of, do we need to buy a cot? And like, do we need to get some baby grows? Like, you know, because obviously you're probably heart was in your mouth the whole time for that. Or do you feel once you got to, because you never even got to 12 weeks for any of the other ones, did you?
No.
So once you got there, that gave you some peace of mind, then that feel different, that pregnancy?
Yeah, it did. So I think I was just in shock for a lot of it. So when I initially got pregnant, I was being really cautious with my optimism. I just kind of, you know, so the IVF clinic did do a scan at about 6 weeks. So I was just thinking, okay, just keep calm for 2 weeks, go for the scan and see what happens. So it, like, this was COVID as well. So I was going in on my own.
Yeah. So okay.
I remember walking up the steps and just being like, oh, please, like, just like.
Just be in the uterus. Yeah.
Just be there.
Yeah.
So I remember just walking down and like sitting into the, lying on the bed for the scan and just being like, please, when I look at this screen, like, I cannot see an empty uterus again. And then when I saw there was a baby in there, like, I cannot describe. I could not believe it. I just couldn't actually believe it. And I mean, when I say there was a baby in there, I could just see this little black dot.
Yeah.
But it was my black dot.
It was your black dot, exactly.
And it was in the right place. Oh. So they printed out a little picture and I was like, I mean, this is my eighth pregnancy. I finally have a little picture.
Oh.
And it was still like this little black dot. But I remember walking out to my husband and I said absolutely nothing. I just gave him the picture because I was still speechless. And like, neither of us could believe it. I think we were just speechless for another 2 weeks because there was another scan in 2 weeks' time. And then the scan in 2 weeks' time, you could kind of make out the little embryo. And it was just, I couldn't believe it. And there was a heartbeat. And then I had the 12-week scan at the hospital. And, you know, everything was fine. And I suppose each milestone from then on, I kind of got more confident. Even though I think I was still like 32 weeks before I actually bought a baby grow.
That's the question. Yeah, exactly. Like,
literally. I remember like walking into like the baby section in Dunn's and walking out like easily five times before I said, Katrina, just go in and buy the baby grow. It was the one he was going to be put into when he was born. I think it said, hello world, I'm new or something. And I picked it up about five times before I actually went back 2 weeks later and bought it. So it did take a while, but like eventually, you know, it did get there.
And in hindsight now, do you think it just was like literally the egg needed to just be inserted in the exact right place? And that was just, it couldn't figure out how to get from the fallopian tube down to the uterus. And that's almost what it seems like it was, isn't it? That the egg and the sperm were always healthy. Like the fact that you almost got pregnant every time you tried to get pregnant, didn't you? Like,
yeah, literally it would be 2 months at max. It would just always happen. I definitely think, a journey issue. I would probably think, was there endometriosis in the tube? Because they were checked several times, in like the checks that they can do, you know, they did the dye test, they did a hysteroscopy as well. So I definitely think that was there just a tiny
something
bit of
there.
Endo in there that was just grabbing onto them.
Yeah.
And
from kind of the other side, I think people also want to know what you did from like nutrition. And I think we'll get into that in maybe the next episode with IVF. But like, what did you learn yourself? Like, if you said like the three most important things, say nutrition, you know, that really puts you on the spot. But between supplements and diet and lifestyle, like what would be your three main things for people to do? Or maybe actually better questions. What helped you the most in coping with everything and making yourself feel good and feeling like you're on the right track with everything?
So to be honest, keeping on top of my diet and lifestyle was one of them. And I'm not just saying that because that's my job now. like from a personal perspective, it did, because that's what I had control over. Like, I could make myself as healthy as possible and not, you know, like I still lived a completely normal life. I had my takeout every weekend and, you know, my glass of red wine and everything. But, you know, just keeping myself healthy and keeping myself fit and all of that sort of thing, it did make a difference. You know, because I always kind of found like I could switch off when I knew that everything was covered. So
yeah, like you're saying, yeah.
So that, like, that did keep me going. I think the other thing was, it wasn't the only thing that I was always focusing on. I was always doing something else. I was kind of making other areas of my life grow. Because I know like your life can stop, and that's totally normal, totally understandable. But I definitely found growing my life in other areas helped. So I was studying nutrition during this 6 years. I was setting up my nutrition business during this 6 years. You know, I kept busy and kept growth happening in other areas. It definitely does help.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's amazing. So guys, anyone listening, Katrina obviously offers consultations. Like, she's a brilliant fertility nutritionist. And the fact that you've been through it, I remember my mum saying to me years ago, and it's always stuck with me, that like all of our experiences make us better practitioners. And you could literally have that like on your, you know, front of your clinic door. Like, there's a difference between understanding something and being through something. Like, so any of my clients come to me, if I'm booked up, I'm like even now, anyone going for IVF or, you know, if a lot of recurrent miscarriages, I'm like, Katrina is like unbelievable, because you can have, you know exactly what they're feeling. And Katrina has her own clinic as well. She works for us, which obviously we should lie about. But you do have your own clinic, and she's the DNA nutritionist, isn't it, on Instagram. And I will obviously leave her handles below. So yeah, Katrina, that was so emotional. Thank you so much for sharing that story. And I'm sure you will help so many people. If they're like, do you mind if people contact you after the podcast, like if they have any questions?
Oh no, absolutely, of course. Like, I always remember as well, like these stories of hope kind of kept me going. I'd come across a story like some bit similar to mine online, and it would just keep me going, you know, during times where I was kind of getting to the end of my tether or the end of my hope bucket. I would just see these stories and just latch onto them and just think, well, if it can work for them, you know, why can't it work for me, sort of a thing. And I always kind of said, if it works out for me at any point, I'm sharing this story. And if it's just a story of hope for one person, then it'll have done its job.
We've done our job, definitely. Guys, again, thank you so much, Katrina. All the links will be below in the episode, and we will chat to you all next week.
Thanks for having me.